Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and late summer storms have delivered some much-needed rain to some areas of the state, way too much rain to other areas. Those storms also blew in an unexpected surprise. Coming up in a few minutes, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Stile will be here to answer your plant questions, but we're going to start today with Iowa State University Professor of Entomology Donald Lewis and an influx of army worms. Hello, Donald.
Hello, Charity. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, wonderful to have you here. And first, for those of us who aren't familiar with them, what is an army worm?
An army worm is a caterpillar that looks a lot like cutworms. So they're sort of fat, pudgy, and hairless. And they get that name because when they emerge in mass numbers, they march across the field, they march across the lawn, eating everything in their path. Much like an army would march across an area, leaving destruction behind. So when we say the word army worm, we're actually talking about more than one kind of army worm. There is the true army worm, which we occasionally see in the springtime. What we're looking at in the fall of 2021 here is the fall army worm.
Okay, and describing their path of destruction doesn't make me feel very comfortable. Are these dangerous? Is this a problem that army worms are arriving in the state?
It's not a problem for us yet, but we are looking, we are monitoring, we are watching. The fall army worm has been a severe pest in the southeast and eastern half of the United States, all the way from Oklahoma to Georgia, from Indiana to Maryland. The caterpillar stage has ruined lawns and fields and has been a tremendous problem in that part of the country. The offspring of the caterpillars that were feeding to the east of us transformed to the moth stage, as caterpillars do, and then those moths blew into Iowa and laid their eggs. So what we have right now are millions of eggs of army worms in the state of Iowa. We don't know if that's going to turn into a caterpillar problem, but we're waiting and watching and hoping to find out what comes next.
Are these a native species or is this an invasive species?
It's native, but not necessarily to Iowa. It's native to North America. This is an interesting one, like some of our other insects, that developed in more tropical areas and survives in those tropical climates. The army worms that arrive in Iowa will not make it through the winter. So we don't have to worry about these showing up first thing next year. If there are any fall army worms in Iowa, when the soils freeze, those caterpillars or their pupae will freeze also. But the fall army worm survives in South Florida and South Texas and further down into Central and South America. And every year, more of them blow into the United States and further up into the United States in the moth stage. So this is one that is sometimes a problem. It's not been a problem for us, but all of my colleagues in the eastern United States are saying they have never seen anything like this before in turf grass damage in the eastern part of the country.
Wow. Well, and okay, so they blew in, they're laying millions of eggs, or they laid millions of eggs. I haven't personally encountered all of these eggs, Donald, but you've been getting calls from people who are running across them, right?
Yes, and the eggs are laid on almost anything that is up in the air above turf grass. So people have sent us photos of them on birdhouses and bird feeders, on their automobiles, on the siding of their house, on the porch umbrella that they use for shade, also on poles and posts and trees. These egg masses are laid everywhere. Now, the egg mass itself is sort of tannish gray. It'll have from about 100 to 200 little tiny spherical eggs, And these can be laid in a circle that's an inch in diameter. They can be laid in a long, elongated pattern that may only be half an inch wide and 2 inches long. But then they're covered with fuzz from the female moth's body. And they have this fuzzy, moldy look to them. But when you get close enough, you can see that it's actually this mass of little tiny spherical eggs.
Okay, and if you encounter this mass of little tiny spherical eggs, and by the way, Extension and Outreach tweeted out a picture of these eggs today. I've retweeted that, so you can find that on Twitter if you're curious to see what they look like. But so if I run across these on my swing set or my lawn furniture or my car, what should I do?
Wait and watch. Now, if you want to be a tidy person, you can scrub them off, you can brush them off, you can wash them off with a paper towel and soapy water. You could maybe even get them off with a high-pressure stream of water from your garden hose. But destroying them will maybe have an emotional satisfaction for you, but it's not going to change the big picture for us. But cleaning up the places we find them may help. Now, the next step, though, is these eggs are already starting to hatch into tiny little caterpillars that are less than a quarter inch in length. And will they drop from where they are, and will they begin to feed on the turf grass? We need to wait and see. But that would be the next step, and that would be the harmful part of this life cycle, is if the eggs hatch into caterpillars that begin feeding on turf grass. So watch for that. Starting now. It could be happening now, and it'll happen for about the next week or 2 weeks.
When you say we have to wait and see if they'll do that, I mean, that's what they do. What would prevent them from doing that here in Iowa?
It could be weather related, and it could be that the caterpillars hatch in a bad spot. They don't fall onto a grass they can feed on. What we've heard from back east is they're kind of picky about which species of turf grass they will eat. And if Kentucky bluegrass, of course, is our major turf grass in our lawns in Iowa, and that's one that they do eat on. But if you have some other kind of grass, maybe they won't feed on it, or maybe they fall onto the vegetables, or they fall onto the flowers where they don't do well. So it's not guaranteed that we're going to see lawn damage. The other part of this is we are into a cool, rainy spell. Will that delay their emergence? Will that slow down their feeding? Will we have a problem justifying insecticides? That's the part we don't know. Right now, there's no reason to treat your lawn with insecticide. There's no reason to spray insecticide on the egg masses. If you're close enough to spray them, you're close enough to wipe them off with a soapy sponge. So we're waiting to see what comes next, and we hope we don't get severe damage. We know that fall is the best time for turf grass to grow. So maybe we're lucky enough that this came so late in the year that it won't be a problem for us the way it has been to the east of us.
So when these army worms emerge and start moving, how quickly do they grow?
It takes a couple weeks for them to grow to their full size of about an inch and a half to almost 2 inches. So when they're grown, they're a really large caterpillar and easy to see. When they're small, they're going to be much more difficult because they camouflage very well. They carry the colors of the ground. They're kind of black or orange or gray colors that blend in very well. So they will be hard to see at first. When they get large, insecticides don't work well. So if we're going to have a problem, and if you're going to prevent damage to your lawn, it's going to have to be against the small caterpillars. But generally, within 2 to 3 weeks, they will have grown, which is very quick for caterpillars to get to that size in a short amount of time.
Could this be an incredible spectacle? If there are a lot of these eggs in different places in the state, are we going to see the ground just crawling with caterpillars?
It could happen. And if you Google for pictures from Ohio or Georgia or Pennsylvania or Maryland, you'll see lawns that are just totally brown. And it's huge expanses of turf grass that have been defoliated to the point that the grass died. Now, they don't eat all the grass, but they eat enough of the grass blades that a triple whammy occurs. They ate some of the grass. It's the drought time of the year. and without the shade of the grass blades, the crowns of the grass plant desiccate and dry out. So lawns can be killed by this. We're not expecting that severe of damage here in the state of Iowa because of the lateness of the season. But if you look at pictures from any state east of here, you'll see this enormous number of caterpillars causing a huge amount of damage over large areas.
And you've been getting phone calls about people finding these eggs. I'm sure that it's impossible to know this, but do you have an idea of where they arrived in the state?
I did finally track down the messages I've received, and it's pretty much every place between Lee County and Dubuque, and from Dubuque over to Hancock County, and then back down to Des Moines. So that describes a pretty large section of the southeastern one-third of the state of Iowa. That's the area I've heard from. So the moths arrived either late in the third week of August, and when they arrived, they immediately apparently started laying their eggs and laid them in all of these unusual places.
Now, when it gets cold, the army worms are not going to be able to survive the winter, is what you were telling us earlier. But If they do eat your lawn, will your lawn recover next year, or is this a fatal blow?
Because it's in the cool of the season, the cool of our cooler part of our year, because we have moisture now in most of the state, the death of grass plants is not likely. Could happen. It could look as bad as it does in the eastern United States, but it's not likely to ruin your lawn entirely. Now, there may have been some earlier defoliation down in the southeast part of the state, and those lawns may have suffered because it was drier then. But the point is, your grass will probably survive. It's going to need fertilizer. It's going to need water. It's going to need tender, loving care to make it through to next year. But we can do that.
All right. So we'll wait and see. But sounds like we're not going to go the way of Ohio, hopefully. You sound optimistic, in a word.
I'm optimistic that we will get through this. Our lawns will be there, and we'll have something else to worry about next year.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Professor of Entomology, Aaron Style, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, is going to join us in just a moment. And of course, you are welcome to ask your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Corridor Vein Center and Corridor Aesthetics, treatment for varicose veins and spider veins, also providing facial rejuvenation services and treatment for moderate to severe acne. More at Corridor Vein and CorridorAesthetics.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Professor of Entomology, Donald Lewis. And now joining us, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, Aaron Style. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning.
And it's certainly been one of those be careful what you wish for kind of weeks, with a lot of people getting much needed rain and then, of course, flooding on the Wapsipinicon and the Turkey Rivers. So I suppose in some areas it's been a great week for a little bit of moisture that we've been waiting a long time for.
It really has been for many areas. That is very true.
Yeah. Sometimes there's just a little too much. All right. We have a lot of questions already. And Donald, we've got an army worm question already from Gail in Polk City. She said, I had a huge number of army worms emerge and march across my yard in June. They ate the roots of the grass where they had been larvae, so my lawn looked terrible afterward. I don't like to apply pesticides on my yard, but is that something I'm going to have to do?
Maybe, maybe not. June is a funny time for the army worms to have been there. There's a couple of other species that come to mind. But the important thing is what happened in the past is done. And putting an insecticide on after the insects have done their damage, after the insects are gone, is counterproductive, and revenge treatments are never a good idea. So we don't worry about that. We just keep looking ahead to see what's going to come next. And right now, we're past the state fair. We're back in school. And those are the two triggers that indicate to me it's time to be serious about renovating the lawn. Now's the time to be controlling Creeping Charlie and Nimblewill. Now's the time to be reseeding. Now's the time for fall fertilization. So now's the time to reinvigorate your lawn from whatever happened in the past. And insecticide is not likely to be part of that equation.
All right. And if you need pointers, you can go back and listen to our podcast from last week when we had Adam Tomes on the show saying exactly the same thing and giving us all great instructions. Let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Carol is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have quite a few gladiolus bulbs. They are not, quote, hardy. I haven't planted them. If I plant them really deeply now, do you think they would survive? If not, could I plant them in planters, have them outdoors until the frost, and then bring them indoors?
So they are not very likely at all, even planted deeply, to survive the winter. They are not very winter hardy. They're not even really very close to winter hardy here in Iowa. So as long as they're still firm and they're not dried out, you could plant them in containers and basically grow them outside until frost is impending and then bring them in. It's going to be really tough to do that. At this point in the season, you're probably better off trying to hold on to them for planting next spring, making sure that they don't dry out, often storing them in some layers of sphagnum moss that's very, very lightly wet. Some folks will store them in sand or near sand. You have to be careful not to let them stay too wet, but keeping them kind of hydrated that way, but still dormant through by keeping them dark and in a cool place through the winter for spring is probably going to be your best bet. Anything that comes growing this late in the season, you're not going to have enough light indoors for flowering because they'll have to be inside by the time they're ready to flower. It's kind of a tough spot for that right now. So I'd probably wait, try to hold on to them and plant them in the spring.
Are you talking about a refrigerator, or does it have to be, what temperature should they be stored at over winter?
If you can find good root cellar temperatures, so like in the 50s would be ideal. A refrigerator is a little too, probably a little too cold, but the ideal temperature is going to be 55, somewhere in there.
All right, so my basement would be perfect. Carol, I don't know about your basement, but good luck with that. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Donald, I'm fairly certain you're not going to know the answer to this question, but I like the way Janie thinks, so I have to ask the question. She says, could a flock of chickens be used to control armyworms? If so, can you say how many chickens might be needed to cover a typical residential lawn area?
Wow. Well, that is a good option. And at least this makes sense. The chickens peck on the ground. They might feed on armyworms. I hear people mention chickens for other things like Japanese beetles, but those are up in the air. So this makes sense. Now, how many armyworm larvae would a chicken eat if a chicken would eat armyworms? I don't know.
There's no definitive answer here, but I know my chickens, and I sure think that they would eat armyworms.
But. Yes, and but what else is out there for the chickens? You might have to make your chickens pretty hungry to eat armyworms. But I like that idea, and I hope either you or the caller will do an experiment for us and let us know how many armyworm caterpillars a chicken will eat in a day.
Right. I mean, we're going to need to get some scientific equipment and set up a time-lapse photography, and we'll get this done, I think, Donald. But
I think
luck.
You need a grant from the National Science Foundation.
I think you're right. And of course, the problem is if you have too many chickens on your lawn, then you'll lose your grass anyway. So there's a fine line to be struck there. Good luck with that, Janie. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. John is on the line next in LeGrand. Hi, John.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have Concord grapes that have been very prolific for many years. They're the old kind that have seeds in them, and they're really, really good. This year, when I went out to, they were loaded. The grapes were just loaded. They're all shriveled up, and there were a couple of good grapes on a clump, and there was some kind of a wasp or bee that was sitting there, and I wonder if what has happened to my crop of grapes.
Well, Donald, do you want to give that a try?
Sure. Sometimes in dry weather, your grapes are the only moist thing available. And at this time of the year, some of our wasps, such as the paper wasps and the yellow jackets and even the honeybees, are sort of desperate for sugar and water at the same time. And that means your grape is a great source of what they need. It's a tough thing to do because we're coming into harvest and we don't want to spray insecticides. The wasps and bees are not easily dissuaded from feeding on grapes. And so we try to avoid cracking. We try to keep the area free of damaged fruit and hope for the best. But this is typical of wasps and bees to feed on grapes, apples, peaches, other fruits late in the season.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, John. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And here's a question from Nancy in Urbandale. We recently had a problem with carpenter ants that made us question our use of shredded cedar mulch around the outside of the house. Should we be concerned? Will red cedar mulch attract carpenter ants? We don't want to use rock. So is there another kind of mulch that you would recommend?
I don't think mulch is the issue here. The carpenter ants nest in larger chunks of wood, such as hollow tree branches or old stumps or old logs or even chunks of firewood. They'll also nest in smaller pieces of wood like damp windowsills that are holding too much moisture, posts in the ground. But as far as the mulch itself, that's not a big enough chunk for the carpenter ants to nest inside. So I don't think mulch is the issue. We tend to prefer natural mulches over stone or rock mulches. It doesn't really make a whole lot of difference, but the natural product will contribute to the soil better than the rocks and stones will. I think carpenter ants are long-distance migrators, and they will go long distances looking for food, and so it could have been from a colony some distance away. Now, the other possibility comes to mind. It's not carpenter ants. It could have been field ants, which nest in the soil under the mulch, but I don't think the mulch is the problem. So enjoy the mulch. Keep watching the ants. See if you can figure out a source, and when we figure out where the ants are coming from, we can target a pesticide application to just that area.
All right. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with me, Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Professor of Entomology and Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Stile. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Dave is on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Megan.
Dave, what's your question?
After the derecho, prior to the derecho, we had a number of locust trees that were growing along our property line, and they were damaged during the storm, so they had to be removed. And I've noticed, as well as my neighbors, is that we have a lot of these little locust trees that are popping up from the ground I probably had 200 of them in my backyard. So I went around and I pulled them. And it appears to be like they are growing out of an established root that is already underground. So I was wondering, A, what is the best way to rid myself of this? And B, is this just a sign that tree is saying, hey, I've been damaged. I need to send a signal out to say, hey, I need to start letting other trees sprout from my roots. And that's really all I had, but I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Dave.
Yeah, locust in particular is a tree that is likely to do something like this. It lost basically all of its top growth, but there is still all of that root mass underground. And so it's sending up new shoots to help support that root mass. And as long as that all those roots are underground, you'll see some of these sprouts come up. Over time, they'll get less and less because some of that root system will die. It is kind of a sign that the tree lost a lot of material and it needs to support that root system somehow. So it's sending up new shoots to do that. You can mow them off, cut them off as you see them. If you're getting rid of the tree entirely, sometimes grinding the stump will help a little bit. But things like locust, other trees can do this too. Will send up stuff sometimes several feet away from the original kind of trunk or stump that's left behind. The only thing we can really recommend is removal when you see them. If they're in the lawn, you can just mow them over if they're small enough. You can treat the cut end after you remove it with a herbicide. That'll help kill some of that root system that's underground so that you get fewer of them. But as long as that root system is there, it will continue to do this. And until it dies, and constantly removing these little shoots will eventually kill it. You'll see these little sprouts popping up around the lawn.
All right. We have a follow-up question on armyworms from Gail in Polk City. She was the question that we already answered, Donald, but she has some more information for you. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Donald. Just wanted to clarify a little bit. So what I saw in June in my yard was this just mass number of caterpillars emerging over the course of maybe a week, and they were kind of ugly little, you know, green brown colored fat guys, hairless, like you said. They all emerged, they marched toward the south across the driveway and into neighbors' yards, and people were commenting about them. And I discovered that where they were coming from, the grass was dead in patches. And it was droughty at that time, and I don't water my lawn regularly, so it was stressed. I had tons of blackbirds coming in, eating them, which is great. But as I dig in my yard to plant some more things, like pulling up some sod, I have tons of grubs in my yard. So I guess I'm just wondering if you didn't think it was those army worms, what I've got going on, is it the Japanese beetles? And then, you know, I'm having a soil quality restoration done this weekend, which should help, but still, I'm just afraid I'm just going to have a perpetuating cycle.
I missed your location, Gail. Where are you from?
I'm in Polk City.
Polk City. Well, I was guessing further south. Well, I don't know what started all of this. Could the things marching across the lawn have been millipedes? Were they hard-shelled and crunchy?
No, they were absolutely caterpillars.
Okay. Well, then you were the unusual outlier to our expectations here. We normally don't see this kind of a problem.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Yay.
And it would be fun to follow up on this. My guess is this was a fluke. As you go back through your records, have you ever seen caterpillars marching across your lawn before?
No, this was the first year that's ever happened.
Well, we hope it stays that way and it's that long again before the situation repeats. But the grubs in the soil, yes, that could be the larvae of the Japanese beetle. And as part of the restoration, they may choose to make an insecticide application. But we're past the time when some of our insecticides will work because they're fairly slow active and they only affect the small larvae. If your larvae are grown, then the company will have to choose a faster acting insecticide. And they have a good choice to do that, but it takes, we're past that time when some of our preventive insecticides would work. It has to be a curative insecticide. So I wish I knew exactly what was going on, and I hope the restoration gives you a nice, thick, lush lawn, and it stays that way for a long time to come.
So if I were to apply, I hate the thought of applying an insecticide, so I may not do it, but if I did that like in April before all these grubs start feeding again and emerging, would that potentially help curb the issue?
The application of insecticides in the spring is not a good grub control. If we're going to have a grub problem, it's going to be in September or October, and the insecticides we apply in the summertime are meant to prevent white grubs in August. So if you already have white grubs, it needs to be a different insecticide, such as Dilox, and that has to be watered in very thoroughly so the insecticide gets down into the ground where the grubs are. You might want to take some test digs out there. We think it takes 10 or more white grubs per square foot to be a problem. And if you're just finding one every once in a while, then the insecticide isn't justified. So do a little more looking, and we hope the situation improves.
Yeah, and if they show up next year, she should take pictures?
Please do.
All right, Gail, thanks a lot for your call and good luck. We will be back again in just a moment. With me today, entomologist Donald Lewis and horticulturist Aaron Style. You can join with your questions, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Aaron Style and Iowa State University Professor of Entomology Donald Lewis. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have a lot of insect questions. Donald, you arrived at exactly the right moment. Here's one from Luke in Cedar Rapids. He says, I have a tree that had magnolia scale pretty bad on a few branches. I cut off the badly infested branches, but I can still see a few here and there. What would you recommend as a course of treatment this fall?
Magnolia scale is a killer, and it often sneaks up on us. Populations build up very quickly, but magnolia scale is huge. The individual scales may be the almost the diameter of a dime, and that's a big scale insect. They feed on sap from the twigs, from the stems, and that sap is released from the scale insects as honeydew, and so often our infested magnolias turn black from the sooty mold that grows on the sticky honeydew from the plant. Pruning off the badly infested is a good idea. The second possibility is using a systemic insecticide sometime in the midsummer before the problem becomes huge for that particular plant. There are also sprays that can be applied, but timing is fairly critical for those. So keep reading about magnolia scale because control is important. We have seen it take down huge plants very quickly, but we've also seen the insecticides rescue plants here on campus that were heavily infested. So unfortunately, this is one where sprays are likely to be needed, but you have the option this time of using a systemic insecticide that is applied to the soil that will go up into the plant and kill the insects that are feeding on the sap.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Here is Debbie on the line from Illinois. Hi, Debbie.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple questions. One, I have a lilac bush that was pretty old, and I severely pruned it this spring after it flowered. But now this, it's got like powdery mildew pretty badly now. And I had, you know, it was well, pruned and plenty of air movement and not very wet. So I'm just wondering what what I should do to help help that come back for spring. And then the other question I had was about I bought three things of corn as a nursery this spring just for fun. I'm not a here's my question. I bought three. I think it's sweet corn, but I'm not sure. They were plants that were about a foot high, planted in the end of June. And now they're like probably 6 feet tall. They're doing terrific. They're growing cobs. And I don't really know. I never stopped to think about it. Am I going to damage my flower gardens by having this there just kind of for fun? Should I do something with it?
All right, Aaron, you want to tackle the lilac first?
Yeah, let's talk about the lilacs. Our lilacs this summer got hit really hard, and we had a lot of foliar disease issues with them, powdery mildew being one of them. A lilac is not going to have kind of established plant is going to recover fine from this. The best thing you can do is make sure you have good fall cleanup. Get rid of all that foliage that falls off this fall so that there's less powdery mildew around to re-inoculate the plant the following year. Also make sure that this plant's in full sun. A lot of times we see powdery mildew worse on those lilac shrubs that are growing in part shade or a little too much shade. The increased air circulation is a great start to help with that. In terms of the corn, it's not going to do any harm to have it in your garden around other flowers or plants. I suspect that unless it was planted very late, that it is not sweet corn. Usually sweet corn is ready a little bit earlier in the season. It also tends to be maybe just a little bit shorter, although it's not unheard of for sweet corn maybe to be 6 foot tall. So you can use it as an ornamental. You can use it to feed squirrels or birds. You can just enjoy it. It's not going to cause any issues for your other plants nearby.
All right, Debbie, thank you so much for your call. Here's a question from Lori. My hollyhock leaves are riddled with holes and finished blooming early. Now new plants are starting and the holes are coming back. Is there anything I can do about this? Do I need to pull them up and start over? This feels like a combo question. Donald, do you want to go first?
Hollyhocks are tough. They are durable. They tend to withstand whatever we give them. But there is a little tiny black weevil. Oddly enough, it's named the hollyhock weevil, which does the type of damage she's describing. They make little holes in the leaves. They also feed on the flowers occasionally. But hollyhock weevil is kind of a curiosity. We don't normally have to treat for that. We know it's there. We see the damage, but they usually survive. Now, why didn't they survive? That's an Aaron question.
All right, Aaron.
So, if damage was severe enough, I suppose you could see that. And especially if it was combined with other things, hollyhock has some rust diseases that can be really severe. Japanese beetle will feed on hollyhock as well. If you put all this stuff together, it could have caused some die. And then you layer on top of that, if conditions were really dry, it may have been just a little bit too much for those particular plants. I don't think you'll need to pull them all out. I think I would let what's there grow and continue to try to support that root mass that's underground. And this fall, good fall cleanup will be helpful. Again, for all the same reasons I just mentioned earlier with the lilac, it can help kind of eliminate some of the potential disease and even some of the insect issues that might overwinter in that dead foliage. So making sure you do good fall cleanup and kind of keeping an eye on it the following year is probably the best way to move forward.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Gail is on the line in Marion. Hi, Gail.
Hi, nice to talk to you. I have a young tree, a Japanese lilac tree that I planted in July. And it still has the white corrugated around the trunk, and it still has the supporting rod that they sell them with. So when should I take those away?
Aaron?
So that white corrugated kind of plastic tube, I would leave on through the winter as long as it's not constricting anything, that it's big enough that the trunk isn't kind of pushed or pressed up against it on all sides. I would leave it through the winter. That will be very beneficial in keeping hungry little rabbits off of that when we have a lot of snow cover and they don't have a lot else to feed on. Typically, I put that protection on my small trees sometime in the fall and remove it usually around first part of April, when I know that for the most part snow cover is done for the year. The stake can stay on probably through the winter, and as long as the tree seems to be well supported, if you remove it, I would remove it at that time. They are meant to be temporary. They should probably not be on much longer than a year or so.
All right, Gail, thanks for your call. Here's a question from Mark in Marion. For you, Donald, he says, we seem to have a larger population of picnic bugs this season. Can you educate us about this little guy?
Picnic bug is also known as the four-spotted sap beetle. Sap beetles develop in areas of fermenting or decaying organic matter, and that would be things like cracked tomatoes, overripe muskmelons, other organic debris that's on the soil. And I agree. I think I have seen more four-spotted sap beetles this year than we have in the past. I've had complaints now from sweet corn growers that the sap beetles attack the ends of the ears. So it's a well-known insect. It varies from place to place and from time to time. By the time we have them, there's not much we can do. We can't treat where they come from. There's an interesting technique that vegetable growers used years ago, and that was a technique called bait bucket. What you would do is set a bucket outside of the muskmelon plant, outside of the tomato patch, and you would put an overripe fruit in that bucket and then sprinkle it with an insecticide powder. The theory, maybe it's a true theory, the theory is the beetles will be attracted to that overripe fruit in the bucket. They'll go in and feed there. They'll encounter the insecticide and die. I don't think we use bait buckets as much as we used to because, maybe they didn't work as well as we thought they did. But that's one thing you can do. You can set up a trap to try to lure them out of the area. The other thing we always talk about with vegetable and fruit production is harvest early, harvest thoroughly, harvest cleanly. Don't leave any damaged produce behind. And harvest just a little bit ahead of ripe so that you get there before the beetles do.
All right. Good advice. Let's go back to the phones. Lori's on the line in Davenport. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I have couple blackberry bushes, and they're 3 years old now. And this summer they produced a prolific amount of berry, which is great. But now I'm wondering, do I need to trim them back so that they produce again next year? Because they are just getting out of hand. I mean, these shoots that are coming off are just, they're 12 feet long.
Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, so often we see, and is this a blackberry or is it a black raspberry?
No, this one is a blackberry.
Okay. So often blackberries, we see a fair amount of winter damage on the canes after winter. So I would wait until spring and prune back any dead at that time. And if things are still too hairy in there, if there's still too much, then you can go and cut back even more. Often we recommend cutting back, each plant has about 6 or so healthy canes coming up out of the ground. And then we prune back all the side branches that come from those 6 canes to about 1 to 1.5 feet. I would do that though in the late winter, early spring, after you can see how much has died back over the winter.
Okay. And I do have a question about my black raspberries. They didn't mm-hmm. produce hardly any berries and they were so tiny. Is there something I need to be doing with that? Do I need to trim them back as well, or? Because right now they're really growing and they've got like a big old bramble.
Sure. Sometimes when we have really dry conditions, raspberries don't do very well. We see very poor fruit set, and then what little fruit is there isn't very plump or large. And moisture is one of the reasons that we sometimes see that. You also will see most like raspberries will produce on last year's stems. So if any of those stems this year that fruited, that flowered and had fruit can be removed down to the ground. You can do that in late winter, early spring as well.
All right, Lori, thanks for your call. Here's a question from Jonathan in Missouri. He says, I have an indoor ficus that has been doing very well lately, but I've noticed tiny black dots on the underside of the leaves. Should I be concerned and what should I do? And is that an Aaron question or a Donald question? I don't know.
Well, if the little black dots move, that would be my question. But if they don't move, I think we'll let Aaron try that one first.
All right.
What can go wrong with ficus? They're so hard to kill.
They are. Well, you know, occasionally you'll find scale, although I would call that a little brown dot, not a little black dot. And they would be on the underside of the leaf. You would also have honeydew. So the lower leaves or the floor underneath the plant would be a little sticky or a lot sticky, depending on how much is there. I have also noticed that occasionally weeping fig will get these kind of little black, kind of like pinpoint dots on it. It's usually not anything that causes a lot of issue. It may be a disease issue. It may be a response to a stressful environmental condition like really intense light or a really wet, dry cycle that it didn't love very much. Although normally they just drop their leaves when they're upset with those kinds of things. So most of the time our homes aren't humid enough to have a lot of disease issues on plants. But if it is pretty humid, that may be what's going on. I would keep an eye on it. I would watch for honeydew, make sure that it's not something like scale. I've definitely had scale on weeping fig, and it is incredibly difficult to deal with if it gets out of hand. So it might be a kind of wait and see what happens situation.
All
right. And we would send this caller to the University of Missouri, but since they're a fan of Iowa Public Radio, they can send their pictures to us of the ficus, and we'll take a look.
All right. Seeing a picture will make a big difference, too.
Listeners get special treatment. Love that. All right. Here's one for you, Aaron, from Jim in Marion County. Is it too late to renovate a raised bed of overcrowded strawberries?
Yes, it is. If you go in there and do a lot of work, renovation work this time of year, you're going to promote a lot of new growth that's going to see a lot of winter damage. Your best bet is if you did not do the renovation this year, you will still get some strawberries next year. They won't be as plentiful probably, but you'll still get some. And then you can renovate those June-bearing strawberries right after they're finished fruiting next summer.
All right. From John, he says, we have found what we think is buckthorn in our flower garden and raspberry patch. How did it get there? And other than digging or pulling it out, is there a way to prevent it from sprouting in our garden?
If it is indeed buckthorn, it came from a bird, most likely. The fruit of buckthorn is very palatable to many birds, and it is very easily distributed that way. So my guess is that it came from a bird, and digging is probably the best and most organic way. You can cut and stump treat with a non-selective herbicide. That's another option too.
All right. And as we are out of time, I'll just tell you, Donald, that you solved a mystery for Carl. He says, I live in New Hampton in Chickasaw County. A week or so ago, as I was cleaning my bird feeders in the morning, I had to shake and remove many moths off of the feeders. I've never experienced this before. Then the past few times I cleaned my hummingbird feeders, I discovered patches of what may have been eggs. Until listening to your program this morning, I didn't think much about it, but they were flat, small, tannish patches that definitely could be eggs. That sounds exactly right. Right, Donald? Army worms they are.
Sounds just right. And we're glad to be of service and glad to have this opportunity on Iowa Public Radio to share what we know.
All right, Donald, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. It's always a pleasure.
Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Professor of Entomology. Aaron Stile, thank you.
You're welcome.
Aaron Stile, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and we will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day here on Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe. Have a great weekend.